Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for another edition of the JMRA Podcast. I am your host, Joe Montana's right arm, breaking down the week that was in the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. We'll guide you along here through all four divisional round playoff games and take a look at the Final Four Conference Championship Sunday right around the corner now after a weekend where the games, I think, were a little bit better than Wild Card Weekend. As you would suspect, it's arguably the best weekend of football all year long when you have these eight teams left, these caliber of teams left, to set the table for our championship weekend. Let's give you the social media breakdown before we get you to the games and all that good stuff. You can check us out on the blog at joemontanasrightarm.com. Also on Twitter at joemsrightarm. Plus on Facebook at, well, simply searching Joe Montana's right arm, and you can check us out on Vine as well. So a lot of cool stuff going on the social media front. I've been trying to counsel 49er fans over the last week over a myriad of issues, including their new head coach, Chip Kelly. But anyhow, it's the Chip discussion's another time for another day. Let's get to the four games in the divisional round that took place, and we'll start it off on Saturday with the New England Patriots defeating the Kansas City Chiefs 27-20. It's weird. There are two of the four games this weekend, I thought, you look at the scores like 15 years from now, even 5 years from now, you'll say, oh, that was a really close competitive game. I wrote a piece on the blog about Andy Reid's time management and how atrocious it was again against the Patriots, but I didn't feel like this game was really that competitive. You know, you never felt like the Patriots were in serious danger in the game. The Chiefs had some drives going that I think, and actually, to be honest with you, I don't know that the AFC title game may look a little similar to this, but we'll get into that in a little bit. The Chiefs did, I thought, a great job of kind of nickel and diming their way down the field, but they have some drive killers throughout. The Patriots got going early with that touchdown, and you know they've been that big proponent over the years of the, you know, they win the coin toss, they defer, and then they kick off, or they get the ball back to start the second half. I actually thought them getting the ball first in this game was crucial because it gave them the opportunity to kind of establish what they had on offense early on, and from there they really had control of the game. So once they get that early touchdown, they get the confidence back. And from there, you know, they really had control of the contest through the whole way. Rob Gronkowski, back after a bizarre week for him. He, of course, had two touchdown catches, caught seven passes for 83 yards. Julian Edelman, his return performance, 10 catches for 100 yards. He looked like he had been playing really the last six, 7 weeks, you know, that he was out. He looked like he didn't miss too much of a beat. There were some drops and things like that that kind of haunted the Patriots a little bit at times. It kind of stopped drives. But by and large, I thought Edelman was pretty good. Of course, speaking of pretty good, what can you say about TB12? Tom Brady, 302 yards, 28 of 42, two touchdowns, no turnovers for Brady against one of the NFL's better defenses in the Kansas City Chiefs. So that was no punk performance at all, as that defense is one of the better units in the NFL. Now, as far as the Chiefs' time management goes, if you have not read the piece on Joe Montana's right arm about Andy Reid and his clock management, check it out if you get a chance. If you have not, I will suggest to you one thing, and that is take a look at the game play-by-play if you go over there and check it out, because that'll give you a specific breakdown of what happened. But make a long story short, the Chiefs took way too damn long to run those plays. Too long. Like, when you're in, to me, inside of the midway point of the second half, or excuse me, of the fourth quarter, and you're down by two scores, you got to go quicker. And they just didn't want to go quicker. You know, Reed said afterwards that it was deliberate that they took that long. For what? For what? They had all three timeouts left. I think these teams get too, like, crazy over the, oh my God, I can't leave any time left for player X. you know, I can't leave all this time for Tom Brady to do what he's going to do. I can't leave all this time for Peyton Manning or Aaron Rodgers or whatever. Dude, when you're losing the game, you can't think like that. All right. You have to kind of realize that, hey, you're not in a position of power right now. You're down two scores. You're not down one score. You're not in a tie game where you're trying to take the lead and then prevent them from getting the ball back and have enough time. That's not where you're at. You're down by 14 points. I think he was just covering his rear end. It's just, it's crazy to me that this guy has put together as nice of an NFL resume as he has as a head coach, and he can't manage time in critical spots. This routinely happened when he was with the Eagles. And if you're not an Eagles fan, I can tell you what you saw on Saturday was par for the course. It happened a few times a season with Reed. They just couldn't get it together at critical points. The two-minute drills are always an abomination, and that's what caught up with him here. It should never take you about, what was it? I think it took him like a minute to run a play. Like, they ran one or two plays from the three-minute mark to the two-minute mark at the two-minute warning. That, to me, is unconscionable. It just did not make any sense at all for the Chiefs to do that. And that cost him in the end, because at 27-20, then, you know, you have to onside kick. They onside kick the ball. It was recovered by the Patriots. And then from there, the Patriots pretty much go to town. They do what they need to do to win the game. So the Patriots grab it by 7, 27-20. A couple of things out of this game from the Patriots side. Health-wise, defensively, they obviously need, I mean, to me, to win the Super Bowl, they need all their guys healthy. And I know you're saying, oh, well, everybody needs to be healthy. I think for the Patriots, especially what they are going to face potentially, you know, on Sunday in Denver, and then potentially in a couple weeks if they win the game in Denver and you see either Carolina or Arizona, the ability to be multiple and show different looks and things like that, it's so important to the Patriots. And if they have that ability, they're going to be tougher to beat. Their linebackers were a little banged up during the course of the game. Didn't appear that anything was significantly serious coming out of the game. So if they are at full tilt next week heading into Denver, that's obviously a good sign for them. Also, that was not a terribly physical game either. Much different than the other AFC game where it was kind of a head knocker between the Steelers and the Broncos. So the Patriots win it by 7, and that leads us into our transition into one of the crazier NFL playoff games we've seen in the last decade.
Rodgers in the shotgun, three receivers right, one to the left. Rodgers looks it over, Starks to his left. Now he moves Starks to the right side. Snap to A-Rod. Looking downfield, being flushed. Rolling left, winds up. Rainbows it high and deep into the end zone. It's high pointed and caught. It is caught for a touchdown.
Yes!
A miracle catch.
Jeff Janis
caught
it
in the end zone.
Can you believe it?
Unbelievable.
Believe it.
Jeff Janis high pointed the football in the middle of the end zone. And the Packers are an extra point away from getting this thing tied.
Arizona and Green Bay, and you heard there the radio call of the Packers Hail Mary from Aaron Rodgers to Jeff Janis. Rodgers doing it again as he was able to somehow fire another pass into the end zone. Like, it's like these guys don't know it's coming. But anyways, to kind of set up all that, again, time management. We talk about this so much. And one other thing here, don't discount this, folks. And this is a crucial point coming up in the next few weeks. These coaches and these players that have never been in this spot before, they kind of freak out. And you can see it in certain situations that they're not used to being in the postseason, and they handle it far differently than what they would during the regular season. You saw it here, I think, a little bit with Arizona. So the Packers look like they're going to be in grave danger. They're trailing 17-13. Arizona has the ball right around the Green Bay 24-yard line. The Cardinals run three plays in about 30 seconds from the Green Bay 24, and they have to, at that point, kick a field goal. So the Packers are basically stripped of a lot of significant ways to stop the clock. All right. They just, the Cardinals, I think, just kind of, you wonder if they said, hey, let's get this thing over with. But they didn't even try to do that. I mean, they run the start. Then the second down play was a pass that was incomplete. And then they run on third down. It just didn't work out. You know, the Packers, I believe, used the second of their three timeouts after the first down run on that drive to set up the field goal to make it 20-13. But I just thought the Cardinals were just kind of cavalier with how they managed the clock there. Again, it just teams, I think, get a little knocked out of sorts when it gets really into money-making time during the postseason. And that happened definitely to Arizona there in the fourth quarter. So it's 20-13 with Arizona leading, and the Packers get the ball back. And then that led to the ridiculous series at the end where Aaron Rodgers essentially throws two Hail Marys in one drive. And to show you how crazy the drive was, Aaron Rodgers, after that 41-yard touchdown pass to Hail Mary to Jeff Janis, finished a drive with over 100 yards passing because of all the penalties that took place during the course of the drive where they got knocked back a little bit. He threw for 101 yards on that drive. Crazy. Anyhow, that drive should have never happened because of the clock management by the Cardinals that kind of gave them that shot in the first place. So Rodgers hits Janis on a throw where Janis, you got to give him a ton of credit, that athleticism, using it there to jump up, snag the ball out of the air, and then the extra point is good. Tied at 20, go to overtime with the TD at the gun, basically, to end regulation from Rodgers to Janis. Now, at this point, you get that whole fiasco with the coin toss. Now, if you did not see it, when they did the coin toss in overtime, the coin actually did not flip, and the officials opted to flip the coin again. Now, believe it or not, the NFL rule allegedly states that the coin does not have to flip in order for it to be a coin toss. So anyhow, after all of this mess, and Aaron Rodgers apparently was upset about how everything went down, but I mean, it's the NFL playoffs and that kind of procedural stuff happens. You're not going to change it in game unless something crazy happens. Anyhow, the Cardinals get the football, and a bizarre throw from Carson Palmer to Larry Fitzgerald leads to the play of the game. 75-yard, well, the most critical play of the game, that is, from the Arizona side. The 75-yard catch and run by Fitz inside of the 10 of Green Bay, and that helped set up the shovel pass from Carson Palmer to Larry Fitzgerald that gave them the 26-20 win in overtime, and a huge day for Fitzgerald. 8 catches, 176 yards, and a touchdown. I thought he was done. I really did. But he has done such a tremendous job of finding a way to stay active and functional in that Arizona offensive scheme. He is really a key cog to what they're doing once again on the receiving side. So his day, I think, really helped save the day for Arizona. Carson Palmer did not play that well, threw a bad interception in the end zone that helped thwart an Arizona scoring drive. You know, I think one of your concerns if you're Arizona next week is Carson Palmer. I mean, he's had some moments, but I think he has obviously cooled off a little bit from the MVP level of play that he showed during really the midpoint and then later on towards Thanksgiving point of the season. So I think you have to be a little leery of that if you're a Cardinals fan heading in to next week. Sunday action. The Panthers win it 31-24 over Seattle, dethroning the two-time NFC champions. There will be a new NFC champion for the first time since the 2012 season. The Panthers led 31-0, and this game really went downhill for Seattle off the jump. Jonathan Stewart had, I believe, a 59-yard run to get going on his first carry of the day. He eventually scored a touchdown on that drive, and then you get the pick six, Luke Kuechly intercepting Russell Wilson, making it 14-0, and that really got the ball moving for the Panthers from there. They led it half 31-0, and it was one of those games where it looked like it was just going to be Carolina in a walk, and then Seattle outscored Carolina 24-0. We've seen this from Carolina during the course of the year, and I'm going to tell you something right now. I don't know for sure. I haven't really wrapped my head too intensely around the AFC Championship game, but Carolina can't do that against these next two teams. Can't do it. Too much firepower, and they're not going to make the mistakes that Seattle did. Seattle, you know, Seattle's gotten a little loose with the football at times during the course of the year. I don't think that's going to happen with Arizona, and I think that's going to be a little difficult, especially if you play Denver with Peyton Manning, if they're doing the whole ball control thing. It's going to be a very tough chore for Carolina to play that uneven and hope to win. So they got outscored 24-0 in that second half. Russell Wilson ended up with over 300 yards passing on the day, but again, two interceptions that were crucial. The offensive line was a mess in that first half. That did not help Seattle as well either. Carolina was led by Jonathan Stewart, over 100 yards rushing on the day. And I think a couple of things you want to take out of this game here of interest. Obviously mentioned the 24 straight points given up by Carolina, which is a concern. You know, you got to close teams out now. You remember if you watch hockey, you watch basketball, you watch baseball, when they go to the best of seven series in the postseason, one of the things you'll hear about that is how hard it is to close out a good team. And I think that especially holds true when you're trying to get to the Super Bowl and you're trying to win a Super Bowl. And this is where I think Carolina and some of their skill guys, you wonder if they're going to have that, as Deion Sanders says, if they have that dog in them to really apply kill shots here in these next two games, because it's going to be a challenge to play as well as they did in the first half. I don't know if Carolina can play like that first half and channel that and continue that on here through the next two games. I think there's a chance, obviously, they could win next Sunday, and then if they get to the Super Bowl, you would have to think that they might be a favorite against Denver. Who knows if they would be a favorite against the Patriots, but there's a chance that that's a team that can win a Super Bowl. But you can't win the Super Bowl if guys are a little tight and unable to finish games. And in fact, after the game was over, Cam Newton said that some of the butts got a little tight there at the end. I don't want to hear my quarterback saying that. And if that's the case, that's a major concern moving forward if you're Carolina. You can't have guys tightening up. And remember, it's so interesting. The last time that Carolina and Arizona played was that awful playoff game last season that opened up the NFL playoffs. And now these two teams playing for birth to go to the Super Bowl. As for the final game of the weekend, Denver defeating Pittsburgh 23-16. The injuries just caught up with the Steelers there. And, you know, they led for a good chunk of the game. They led 13-9, but the Broncos kept chipping away, made it 13-12. And then eventually Manning leads them on a touchdown drive to make it eventually 20-16 and then 23-16 on the final. Ben Roethlisberger went for 339 yards, but not enough weaponry on offense. It was just tough. The rushing attack kind of betrayed him with that critical fumble late in the contest. It really ultimately swung the game back in Denver's favor. You know, when you don't have your playmakers, at a certain point it's going to get you. They don't have Antonio Brown. They don't have D'Angelo Williams. Obviously, they don't have Le'Veon Bell. You can't keep losing those guys and win a game like this on the road against really one of the better defenses in the NFL. As for Peyton Manning, 21 of 37, 222 yards, no touchdowns, no picks. Denver ran for 109 yards and averaged about 3.3 yards per carry. Maybe it's me. It probably is. I felt like Denver ran for 500 yards in this game because when it mattered, they kept getting, you know, 5 and 6 and 7 yard chunks. They got stopped behind the line a lot, but just seemed like they were they did a little bit more business than what the statistics suggest. But in the end, the Broncos grabbed the win. And now for Denver, and this is actually going to lead us a little bit into the transition here for the final four. I think Denver's going to run the football better next week against New England because I don't think New England's defensive front at times is as consistent at stopping the run as maybe they need to be or should be coming into a game like next week. If you're Denver, This is a bizarre spot for you. Now, the Broncos will play the Patriots, as we all know by now. Brady versus Manning 17, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Next Sunday, 3 p.m. from Denver, Colorado. So these two teams met earlier this year. Denver handed New England their first loss of the year. The quarterback in that game for Denver was Brock Osweiler. Now, Chris Rose suggested this on NFL Network on Sunday night, and I'm not suggesting that they follow this line of logic, but he asked the question whether or not Peyton Manning should be the quarterback next week. And look, I think if Gary Kubiak wanted to make that decision, I don't know if he'd be allowed to. I just think at this point, this is who your guy is. You have to go with him. Having said that, if this game turns early in favor of New England, I would consider sitting Manning, because we know this about Brock Osweiler. He could be mistake prone, but the guy can get the ball downfield deep. We saw Manning try to do it today. Didn't look great. They were trying to, he didn't look as sharp as I thought he would. And that to me is a little concerning heading into next week. Like, at some point, he's going to need to make plays repeatedly. I don't think this game is going to be one of those games where, you know, we just watch two teams just kind of running the line for 3.5 quarters, and then bang, here comes a moment of truth, and then Denver drives down the field and scores to go to the Super Bowl. I don't think it's going to be that type of game, you know, 13-10. I don't think it's going to be a game like that. I think it's going to be a little bit more on the high-scoring side. But if you're Denver, you got some tough decisions to make game plan wise, because you know Bill Belichick is going to try to exploit whatever physical ailments Peyton Manning has. And clearly, you watch that game today, there are some there. And one thing that to me was interesting was the radio call of the Denver-Pittsburgh game, the national radio call. So I was listening to that earlier today, and they had Steve Tasker on. He was doing sideline reporting. And he brought up, I didn't even realize this. This is a great point. He said that he's been watching Peyton Manning for a long time, and that normally, if you watch Peyton Manning, he normally comes out on the field really early and goes through all the machinations with the backs and the receivers, and they really gets up a good lather going and just to get a run in and get some practice and work on some things. And he does that well in advance of the normal warm-up time. He said today that wasn't the case. He said it looked like Manning was conserving every ounce of energy he had in order to play well against the Steelers. That is a red flag statement to me, because I said this last week. I thought the toughest game for Denver, no matter who it was against, was not this game, not against Pittsburgh, and obviously they almost lost that game, but the following week against whether it be New England or Kansas City, because if you have a guy who has some physical issues, it's great to have him after a bye week and then play a game. But in the case of Manning here, you know, he's getting back in that routine, and you wonder if he's going to have that juice to really get things going next week against the Patriots. That, to me, is one of the key concepts in the game. Obviously, Patriots versus Broncos defense, and whether or not Brady can get something going with that offense against the Broncos defense, that's another big question mark as well. So a lot of different things at play next week. We'll have a podcast coming out probably Thursday or Friday to preview the championship games, which I think will be very, very interesting. Looking forward to that game. You know what sucks, by the way? I have to work during the AFC championship game, at least during a part of the first half. So I'm like, I can't live blog the AFC title game. I can't live blog the NFC title game for other factors. So it's just going to be a tough weekend. But at least in the blogging, live blogging regard. But nonetheless, we'll still be plenty active on the website and the blog for you during Championship Sunday. Before we go, let's take a quick look at the other championship game. It will be Carolina and Arizona duking it out in Game 2 of Championship Sunday. That one with about a 6:40 start time. I, at the beginning of the playoffs, we were talking about who the Super Bowl would be if you put a gun to my head. I said Arizona and Denver. I'm not sure which way I'm leaning in the AFC Championship game yet, just based off of what I saw this week. As far as Arizona goes, I think with Carolina, a lot of this, at some point to me, is going to come down to them having difference makers on offense. And I know Greg Olsen is a difference maker, but here's the deal. If you take Greg Olsen out of the game, okay, and teams are going to try to do that, and they will have some success. It might be a little limited, but you know, you got to take him out of the game. So then it comes down to two things. Can Carolina run the football, and can Ted Ginn Jr. get deep? Ted Ginn is a little banged up. They didn't hit a big home run play downfield against Seattle. Obviously, that's really not the team you're going to make a living off of in that regard. Now, can they do it against the Cardinals, Carolina? Sure. But that, to me, for Carolina's defense, generating some pressure against Cam Newton in the running game and also in the passing game as well, very important. So I think that's going to be an exciting contest. And from the other side of it, too, I think Carolina's I think both defenses in the secondary can be had. Now, the question is, which quarterback can make the plays happen? Logic would tell you and say, okay, I would rather have Cam Newton in certain spots than Carson Palmer, but man, that is going to be an interesting, intriguing battle, because I don't know, without Peanut Tillman there for Carolina, I think it might be tough for them to get some secondary support for Josh Norman. So a big, big challenge headed the way of the Carolina Panthers on Sunday. We shall see. We'll have the picks for you coming up later in the week. That'll just about do it for the JMRA podcast, as we will bring you the Championship Sunday preview. Conference Championship Sunday headed your way. And, of course, we'll break down both games for you a little bit later on in the week. Again, remember, the blog, JoeMontanasRightArm.com, on Twitter, at JoeM'sRightArm. Check us out on Facebook, Vine, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Until next time, happy football, everybody.